So if you're new, we're kind of in the middle of a series called the Oxfording Pictures, which is a way of really depicting in a graphic form the spiritual practice, the spiritual path, really, from start to finish. Not just the to a very deep ending of that path, kind of the deep completion of that. And it comes from the Zen tradition, and it is a Vipassana or insight practice. Practitioners really helpful for us to see things from a different lens. And so that's what we've been doing. So this picture, each month we take a different picture. We're on, I think, picture number six, I believe, or maybe seven. Yeah, I think it's six. Seven? Picture number seven. The ox forgotten and the self remains. Cheryl, can you throw that picture up real quick? And each of these pictures has a verse that goes with that. So I read the verse right now. The ox forgotten, the self remains. Astride the bull or the ox, I reach home. I am serene. The bull, too, can rest. The dawn has come. In blissful repose, within my thatched dwelling, I've abandoned the whip and ropes. All right, so let's go back to the main screen there. You can see that image there. Great. Now, this picture, it's in context of everything else. So until this month, it kind of made sense. It's like, okay, I start from coming out of daily life, my monkey mind, my mind going everywhere, untrained, and I learn how to steady my attention through meditation practice. So you're going to go through these different stages, and maybe we have a deeper pull of understanding the nature of self, the nature of the Dharma, and that's what pulls us into our practice. Sometimes we're just pulled to understand ourselves more clearly, to understand what causes suffering. And the release of that suffering. And we all come for different reasons. But until this month, it made sense from a kind of an egoic standpoint, a sense of self standpoint, that here I am doing something, practicing hard, focusing on my breath, doing a mantra, whatever it might be. And at some point, there's a struggle with that. There's the time that I get lost. And eventually there's a sense of mastery, a sense of, okay, I've got this technique down. And then it's kind of cruising by itself. Right? So that's often what we hope to attain or hope to get to in our meditation practices or when we go on retreats. And of course, we know that it's not a linear process. We have these deepenings and then we seem to regress, but really we're kind of just more integrating. So this is just kind of the play of things. In this picture, it kind of is completely different. So the ox, this mysterious ox can represent our true nature, our spiritual home. It can also just represent meditation practice itself, our mindfulness. And so here we are, first learning to practice, learning to steady our attention. We get better and better at it. And in this picture, the ox is forgotten. It's like suddenly our practice has disappeared. It's gone. Now, sometimes it's gone because we're really lost in doubt. Sometimes we're discouraged. But this particular picture is depicting a really important way that the ox is forgotten, the practice is forgotten. And that's because the practice has really worked. It's really taken us to a place of deep stillness, of deep understanding. And then that has the technique is no longer needed. The Buddha talked about it in this way. From the raft simile. So he was talking to a group of monks who were a little attached to their views, to their opinions, particularly around the teaching. Like, this is the right teaching. The Buddhist teaching is the only teaching. And they were kind of clinging to it, and not even realizing that they were clinging to it in that way. Because how could I give up? How could we give up something that's been so beneficial? And the Buddha, in his wisdom, realized, okay, they've clung to something that ultimately It's just a technique. It's just a process. It's just a raft to get us across the river. So it goes this way. I'll just read this little section. It comes from the Majjhima Nikaya number 22. the water snake simile. And this is one simile within the sutta. So monks, I will teach you the Dharma compared to a raft for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of holding onto. That's why we want to highlight this sutta in particular to this picture, because it points to when we hold on to things, even something that's really served us, something that's been so precious, like our practice. It's not like we just abandon the practice. It just takes a very different form. And the form is no longer being driven by our willpower, by us. It starts to be driven by itself. Something starts to move through us that's not ego-driven. Okay, so the monk or the Buddha goes on. Suppose a person were traveling along a path. They would see a great expanse of water. The thought would occur to them, here is this great expanse of water with the near shore dubious and risky. Okay, so the near shore represents our normal lives with all its chaos, all its disappointments, all its grief, its loss, the uncertainty, our reactivity, all this internal difficulty we have, both in our internal reaction and also the external one, dubious and risky. And then seeing the further shore, secure and free from risk. But with neither a ferry boat nor a bridge going from this shore to that. Okay? So you see, okay, there's this potential of freedom, of release of suffering, of deep understanding. That's the beginning of this path. As we start to sense that, okay, there's something out there. I'm suffering so much here, but it seems like some of that isn't necessary. Some of it is optional. And we get a sense of where that further shore is. But there's not a bridge there. There's not someone's going to take us across in a ferry boat. So the Buddha goes on with the simile. What if I were going to gather grass, twigs, branches, and leaves, and having bound them together to make a raft, were to cross over to safety on the other shore, independence on the raft, making an effort with my hands and feet. So just imagine getting a bunch of branches and kind of kicking yourself across this water. That's the bit power practice is. I'm trying to find my breath. I'm trying to be less reactive. I'm trying to integrate my practice in my life, in my relationships, and how I show up in the world. And having crossed over to the further shore, they might think how useful this raft has been to me. For it was in this dependence on this raft that making an effort with my hands and feet, I have crossed over to safety on the further shore. Why don't I, having hoisted it on my head or carrying it on my back, go wherever I like? So this raft has really been helpful. I've got to the shore, let me just carry it around. Okay, so you imagine a big mass of sticks and twigs just kind of wrapped together and trying to carry it on your head, carrying it on your back. So the Buddha says, what do you think, monks? Would the person in doing that be doing what should be done with the raft? No. What they should do is what would be much more skillful is realize that I've crossed over to safety on the further shore. Why don't I, having dragged it onto dry land or sinking in the water, go wherever I like? In doing this, we'd be doing whatever should be done, or she would be doing what should be done with the raft. So the raft, this is our meditation practice, that it serves us in a very profound way when we're trying to get to that other shore, when we're in the middle of that water. And when we have difficulty, when we have the busyness of mind, we experience the deep loss that life gives us. That's where the practice comes forth. And at some point, the practice takes us to the other shore, that we're there. And this is where this picture lands us, right in the other shore. That there's nothing that needs to be done. The ox is forgotten. The practice is forgotten. The effort around that practice is forgotten. And this picture points to that subtle attachment we have. That, okay, I just need to keep that death grip on the breath. I need to keep doing the same practice. At some point, a classic example of this is around noting. So noting is a skillful practice where you note breathing in, breathing out, or you might note parts of the body. You might note mental phenomena, thinking, planning, worry. And it helps gives your mind basically something to do. And mind just wants to keep working. So, okay, mind, tell me what's going on. And if you've ever done this practice, you know, sometimes when you're, you know, like it's hot today, maybe you're a little sleepy, you're noting breathing in when you're actually breathing out. You can, it gives you feedback where you're disconnected. But at some point, that technique starts to really develop that steadiness of mind, that concentration of mind. When that concentration comes together, then there's no effort and there's no struggle in noting what's here. You're just simply seeing it clearly. And then you can start to let go of the noting, because the noting really brings the mind a little bit in, brings thought process in to the meditation. And when that stillness is just starting to arise, get out of its way. Just allow it to start to take over. I've noticed this more years ago is starting a retreat and just feeling a little bit out of a loss, because I could feel that sense of being in this picture, that any effort, any technique I applied took me away from that stillness. It interjected something. Really what is interjecting is my sense of ego, of will, that I need to do something with the moment. Even do something like pay attention to it. Because if I let go of that, the stillness, the awareness was just present. There's no effort with that. And this is what this picture points to, is that simple, there's nothing that needs to happen. There's nothing that needs to be done. And sometimes we get to that point and we still want to keep ourselves engaged. Because at this point, so the ox is forgotten, but the self remains, as the title talks about. That self-remaining is such a critical piece, because it means we're still employed. The sense of self is still engaged, still in the driver's seat. Maybe very subtle, but just this quiet sense of witnessing, this quiet sense of knowing. But ultimately, as these pictures start to show us, especially this point forward, that becomes softer and softer till it finally fades. And then there's no separation. There's no distance. As long as there's that sense of me watching, even if I'm very still, there's still that little bit of separation, a little bit of self and other. That self and other. And so sometimes that takes the form of this subtle clinging to the technique. That I sometimes think of it as, to use a computer analogy, you turn on the computer, operating system loads up right away in the backdrop. You don't even realize it's there, but that's how you navigate the whole world. The computer world, that it's all your apps, all your programs. That operating system is that sense of self. That we turn ourselves on and it loads right up. And we can load up as a meditator. Instead of going to Word or going to Excel or Google Docs, we're going to the meditation mode. And the sense of me is right there. And we don't realize it's what's in the backdrop. It helps us order it. It gives us a space and time, past, future, present. So this is going a little far out there, but this is where these pictures take us. So in that moment, when we start to notice that, okay, the self is remaining, noticing that subtle clinging, that subtle holding on to that sense of you as the meditator. Let's go back to that sutta, the last line or two. So talking about the raft, you know, letting go of the raft and just going wherever you want. So in the same way, monks, I have taught, this is the Buddha speaking, I have taught the Dhamma compared to a raft for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of holding on to. Understanding the Dhamma as taught compared to a raft, you should let go of even Dhammas, to say nothing of non-Dharmas. So this deep letting go of clinging, of identification. So this picture, you know, points to it. Sometimes it may feel like, okay, that's a long ways away from where I am. But I would challenge that for all of us, if you feel that. Maybe you don't. Maybe you feel like, yeah, I really understand that. But just notice times when you're just, maybe you're not meditating, that you're just sitting there and you're just simply at ease. There's not a sense of anything that needs to be done. It might be times you don't expect it. Maybe you're waiting for an Uber or a bus. Maybe you're watching the sunset. Maybe you're with a young child and you're just present. There's nothing, you don't feel like you need to do anything. Just notice if you relax into that a little bit. There's something that lets go. And in place, as you let go, you create space for that stillness to arise. That it's not just a stillness, like an emptiness. We've talked about it as emptiness, but this is deep sense of interconnection. So this picture is really pointing to that, the beginning of that. As we let go of technique, let's go of us, really, is a better way of saying it. You know, the oxen has been so important for all these images, these months together, has finally been just forgotten. And in its place is just being present, simply connected to this, what's here, what is arising. The ox forgotten, the self remains. Astride the ox, I reach home. I'm serene. The bull too can rest. The dawn has come. In blissful repose within my thatched dwelling, I've abandoned the whips and ropes. So just two other quick points before we switch into some small group discussion. Astride the bull, I reach home. Reaching home. So often we think of home, I mean, think of our spiritual practice as being out there. Here I am in my neurotic, reactive, miserable sense of me, and I want to get someplace that's not that. So I have to go on this long journey. Right? But really, the journey surprisingly takes us back home, coming back to our true nature. So it's much more of a sense of uncovering what's already here than attaining or creating something new. It's really releasing our distortions, the true nature is present. The thatched dwelling. The famous verse from the Buddha, I think this was sometimes credited as the first thing he said after he awoke, when he's talking about just what he says is this: old house builder, you are seen. You will not build this house again, for your rafters are broken and your ridgepole shattered. My mind has reached the unconditioned. I've attained the destruction of craving. So this analogy of the house, that sense of structure, of container, that sense of me, really, sense of self, seeing the mechanism of what creates that. And abandoning the whip and ropes, there's no longer that need for effort, and no longer that need to apply that ego. All right, so that's all I wanted to say as a recap. So just sit quietly for a couple moments, and then we'll take a break, and I'll come back and introduce the small group discussion points. All right, welcome back. All right, so these small group discussions, we'll do groups of 4 to 5, both here in person, also online. And it's a chance to explore your practice, to speak from your own experience. It's not a time to give advice or try to problem solve other people's struggles, but really just be a witness and also speak from your own experience, right? And just hold everything that's said in there confidentially so people can relax and feel comfortable sharing what they love. So the topic, what I'd like you to explore for, we'll do this for 20 minutes and we'll have groups again, 4 to 5, so you can just kind of monitor your own time. So it's really going off the homework from last week. So reflecting on, first of all, what meditation technique do you use most often? Like, do you note? Do you focus on the breath? Do you do metta? Whatever it might be. Just kind of share that. And then reflect on how that has a certain benefit. What does it cultivate? What do you learn from that technique? Also talk about what's your relationship to struggle within that and effort in relationship to that technique. Because every technique has a certain level of struggle and effort, just because we're training our minds, we're learning to train our attention. And then here's the crux of it, is to notice when does that technique serve its usefulness and when does it start to get in the way? And it starts to be too heavy-handed, if you will. It starts to keep, the technique really works. It's like the raft. When do you want to start carrying that raft around your head? It has already done its job. You cling to that technique longer than its usefulness. And understanding that this comes and goes. Sometimes it's very helpful. Sometimes it's time to be softer, less engaged from a willful place or an effortful place in the meditation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here in the room, you can just find about 4 to 5 other people, and I'll call you back, and then online, you should be put into those groups shortly.
Welcome back. So I have a chance to give the questions I can answer, or just like to share what you explored, what you talked about around meditation technique, both its benefit, how it served you, and also when it's perhaps time to let go, maybe how it's hard to let go. So we can, those in the room, if you like, you can come over here and capture your voice for the people online. And those online, you can just raise your virtual hand and call on you.
All right, those online, can you hear what I just said or no? Okay, sorry, I didn't have my mic on my lapel. So you can just raise your virtual hand and I can call on you when that's ready. I was thinking of there's one hand. Okay, go ahead, Michael.
I'm muted. Okay. We had a good discussion. I think one of the things we all agreed on is that we're all a long way from letting go of the raft and the tools that kind of help us be aware of what's going on in our heads. I think probably many of us practice some sort of noting practice. There were a couple others that were mentioned. Metta is one that I try and struggle with a little bit because I get caught up in thoughts. I like the noting. I think that me and others in the group were commenting that it kind of helps us get a little bit of perspective on our thoughts and the chaos and the monkey mind stuff going on. So I think it's a really valuable tool and technique. I'm not sure when I would be ready to let go of that myself. More practice.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Michael. And just a couple of comments on what you shared. Yeah, certainly noting is a very helpful practice. I really relied on it in my early years very much. And I still sometimes do when my mind is really distracted and I have a lot going on. And it's such a powerful technique because it almost forces you to line up your attention with something and to actually look at it enough to have enough perspective. As you said, you're observing enough to be able to say, okay, that's a breath breathing in, that's a breath coming out, or that's a planning thought, that's a worry thought. And so that's very helpful. Mm-hmm. And so the raft certainly is, it's not about letting go of the raft before it's ready, you know, to understand that it has its purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also helpful to realize that just kind of knowing, to just being aware that at some point the noting becomes, I won't say obsolete, but it's done its purpose, basically. It's got you to the other shore. Now we're talking in really big, almost big images, almost mythological, things. So it seems, okay, I'm never going to get to the other shore. I'm never going to be able to let go of the raft. But I would notice how the noting itself, one of the first instructions I heard, the teacher recommended noting out loud, actually, when I'm really lost in thought. Hmm. He talked about it like being in different gears in a car. Like, your car is stuck in the mud, you know, put it in a four-wheel drive. So it's like saying breathing in out loud, breathing out loud. Hmm. So I really relied on that for a while. But at some point, you get out of the mud and you're more on the dirt road. So you can go into first gear and you can maybe drop that loudness of it and just note it silently. And at some point you get on the freeway and it can be just even more and more quiet. Hmm. So you don't have to think of the raft as like it's an all or none thing. You either have the raft or you don't have the raft. It's more like how intact is that raft? How heavy handed is that raft, if you will, using raft as a technique or a method or just even a process of practice. So start to also notice it that way, that I think that's becomes much more accessible because I think we've all noticed that, that there's times when I have to really kind of roll up my sleeves and put a lot of effort in. And other times I can be much more quiet and just let things kind of float. And just noticing then, okay, noting maybe it's time to relax that, to see if my mindfulness, my awareness can just be there.
Agreed. And I think that's where I see limiting a technique is being in that noting stage. I'm always looking for something that's going on in my head instead of focusing on what's not making the noise and where the kind of the piece is. So that I could see eventually letting go of the raft that way would be helpful.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good insight to notice that noting, it puts us in a certain mode of, okay, I've got to see something, I've got to label it. Dun, dun, dun. Versus relaxing and just letting things arise as they will. And so that's already showing you that, yeah, maybe at times that raft, if you will, the noting can be softened or relaxed. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. Yeah, every technique has its purpose, has its expression, its help, and also has its limitation. Some techniques, if you look at the whole trajectory, they're actually designed to be, what's the word in software, to be self-obsolete, or they're designed to be obsolete at some point. And that's what these pictures really depict, is that, okay, find that ox, catch that ox, struggle with the ox, and then forget the ox. It's at some point, it's like it's no longer helpful. I was thinking of an example, like I use Insight Timer to help time my practice, and it keeps track of how many consecutive days you've done it. And during the pandemic, I was really using it. It's like, okay, I've done like 200 days. And then I went on a retreat. I was teaching a retreat. And then I had this choice point. Do I keep my streak going, even though I'm sitting more than my normal 40 minutes? But do I have to like pull up the app to actually plug it in? And it's like, okay, that's when it becomes a limitation. You know, at some point in daily life, it's really helpful to have that little bit of a carrot, like, oh, wow, good job. You've done this many days in a row. You've done this many minutes. And at some point, it gets in the way a little bit. All right, what else is out there? And what else have you noticed or like to share or explore? All right, Maddie and Olivia, sorry.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, Matt. Sorry.
No worries. I put us both in our name this time. I had a question. So my main technique for years has been focusing on my breath. And I think I've learned a lot from that, but in some ways it's never gotten easier. Like it's always been a lot of coming back. And, you know, it's never quite got to the point where I've been able to just kind of, you know, get out of a four-wheel drive or whatever and kind of let it flow. But I do notice more and more moments where I'm not like actively practicing. I'm just like out in nature, out in the backyard or something. And, you know, I'm kind of choiceless awareness sort of thing happens. I'm kind of able to be there and, you know, it feels different. It feels like, you know, with the ox or the ox dissolves or whatever. And I wonder, I still have a sense that there's more I can learn from focusing on my breath and I can kind of imagine what that might be like. But I also wonder if in some way, maybe that like, you know, bit of struggle with that technique or that, you know, come back might actually enable me in some ways to have these kind of moments, you know, when I'm not practicing, but like those moments didn't happen so much years ago before I spent a lot of time doing this technique. And so maybe there's some kind of, you know, indirect relationship between those. I was wondering if you had any thought about that.
Sure. Got a few thoughts come up around that. So yeah, on the one hand, I just have a few trains of thoughts I want to just touch on because I think there's some important things we can explore with what you just shared. So one hand, practicing like something like the breath that may feel like it's a little bit of an effort. You have to keep coming back again and again. In the midst of it, it doesn't feel like it's really doing anything. But there's always like, I think you said, there's a little bit of a struggle with it. And yet, by practicing that way, you see in your daily life that there's more accessibility to being present, to being just there. There's a kind of a, as you said, choiceless awareness. You kind of go into that. And that's absolutely true, that a technique, you know, can have that effect, that in the midst of it, there might be, you may not feel like you really, that's why I think it's always good not to judge your practice by how it feels, but how you show up in your life. Because you can practice and just feel like you're getting lost in thought every other breath, or halfway through a breath, and you're lost in thought, and you're just constantly trying to bring yourself back. It's like, that's a waste of time, it can feel like. But yet, if you notice, and maybe ask people around you, have they noticed a difference in how you show up in the world? There might be more of a you know, softness, more of a capacity to listen, a willingness to just pause before you jump into the normal reactivity. You know, and there's also this relationship to perhaps nature, to beauty, to stillness, ability to hold grief, to sadness, that all seems to be growing. And it's cultivated through that ongoing regular practice. So, of course, yeah, that's very beneficial. And here's the other train of thought I want to throw in, that sometimes the way we're practicing, like something like the breath, especially if there's a struggle in it, that's an important thing to look at, especially if you've been doing it. You know, I think you've been doing it for a number of years, you know, seeing you through these years, that there may be something that needs to be shifted or tweaked in the way you're practicing. You know, it may be a way that you're looking at the breath. It may be that way you're holding it. It may be that something shifting from the breath to something else might be really beneficial at some point. So it's kind of, in some ways, we're going more back earlier in the pictures, but that's really helpful, just to notice, how does the practice work? What does it cultivate? Where the struggle is? Where is the struggle unnecessary? And then when is the struggle necessary? These are all, you know, questions that we have to kind of grapple with and understand ourselves, that sometimes we really need to struggle, need to really engage. And sometimes that struggle itself is what's keeping us kind of stuck. Thank you, Matt. All right, how about back here in the room? You don't like to share or ask anything? Yeah, Deb, come on up. I always want to say, come on down to The Price is Right.
Okay, this should work. This should work.
Yes, we have Cheryl.
Does it work? Can anyone hear me? Okay. Wow, this is so cosmic.
Just look into the camera.
I open my press, got my ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille. Oh, my God. Okay, what was I going to say now? It had to do with the sense of ease that this picture, I think, is kind of pointing towards, that we can find ourselves have a sense of ease in our practice and in our lives. And I have to say that since we've been talking about this particular picture, I don't know why, but I find myself little by little maybe just noticing that, I'm going to step outside into my backyard and I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to step outside into my backyard. I'm often a very agenda-driven person. Like, okay, get up and the day is like this, next, not that, you know, I got 2 hours for this, 3 hours for that. And it's not very easeful. Right. So, but I can notice, I'm just going to step outside now. So I'm stepping outside. Now I'm going to sit down and I'm just, I'm sitting down. The sky is partly cloudy. And there's the hummingbird near the crocosmia. So just to notice that and let other things kind of drop away. I mean, in a practical sense, we do have to have a bit of an agenda, because we do have things we have to get done. And, you know, there is that reality. But there can be, even with that, when I'm easeful, I can have a sense of ease when I just say, I'm just going to do the dishes. Let's just do the dishes. Let's just sit and talk to my husband. Let's just do that. And just interrupt that kind of constant chatter, 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 you know, find that quieter current in the river. I'm still in the river. I'm still moving in the river, but, you know, it can be a little bit quieter. So that's kind of what this picture brings to me, part of what it brings to me.
Let me ask you a follow-up if I can. So could you hear her online okay? All right. And in person, can you guys hear her a little bit?
Okay.
Couldn't hear her. He's too close to the fan. Let me paraphrase it for a second. So yeah. Just that noticing. It's a great image, though. It's like. To just quickly paraphrase that, this picture brings forth that kind of natural abiding, just instead of that normal tendency to be always doing, agenda-driven, finding that there's these spontaneous times that, okay, I'm just going to go out and sit out, you know, just really casually and just taking what's present, just simply doing the dishes without doing anything other than the dishes, simply mm-hmm. talking to your husband. And that's what this picture brings forth.
Mm-hmm.
So noticing your normal mode and where that comes from, like what motivates that,
mm-hmm.
and how is this what you're describing different? Where is that coming from?
Where is the sense of ease coming from, or my normal way of being?
The intention to sit, just to be.
That's a good question. Where does that come from? Maybe just the being made aware through the picture here that such a thing is possible. You know, that sitting and doing nothing is actually possible. That it can be done, and that I could come to that. It's sort of revolutionary.
Yes, it is very revolutionary.
You know, if you're raised in this culture, as I was, to always be a human doing and not a human being necessarily.
Yeah, so think, try this a little bit. To paraphrase her answer, her response was that there's a kind of a potential, it's like possible. It's like realizing it's possible just to be still, to be quiet. And that's kind of what that brings that forth. And this is really an important point, I think, for all of us to take in, especially those who are kind of doers or really like to engage and kind of feel like you're doing stuff. And that could be, you know, building things. It could be worrying about things. It could be anything that you feel your mind gets really busy with. They're doing. Notice how, you know, where that seems to, when you're in that doing mode, just kind of experiment. When you find yourself, okay, I got to get things done. I've got my to-do list is 10 pieces long. Okay, what's the first one? Or prioritizing all that stuff. Just pause for a moment and notice what that feels like. Where is that coming from? How does it seem to shape the sense of you? You know, like for when I do that, it's like, okay, there's often an edge of I want to, you know, accomplish things. I want to, you know, feel like I've used the day well. But there's also a little bit of like, okay, if I'm not using my day well, I don't know who I am. I'm really defined when I'm busy and I'm really doing a lot. I know exactly who and what I am. Now, contrast that to just, you know, wasting your time, just sitting there, just looking at the beauty of the sun against a tree, for example. You're not being productive. You're not getting anything done on that to-do list. But there's something that's pulling you forth to do. There's something that's being nourished there. There's something that's resonating with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pointing toward something very deep about our spiritual practice. This kind of background stillness, this background quiet that is always there, that our hearts really yearn to rejoin that. But our minds think we have to earn our way into it. We have to earn our place.
Yeah. Yeah. Earn it. Yeah. We have to have merit.
You have to have merit.
You have to have merit before you can rest.
You got to eat your peas before you get to dessert.
Yeah, yeah.
So just start to notice that. and just see, okay, when you, in those times, just, you know, tune to how the heart is, turn to the sense of softness and see if that is something. So the question really is, this is a question that comes up often in our practices. If I really let go of my ego and a sense of self, how do I get things done? How do I do things in the world? And the answer is it comes from a very different place. Mm. Instead of coming from the ego-driven, self-driven mode, it's coming from this other place. And so you're getting tastes of that as you just find yourself spontaneously being present.
Is that perhaps the same place where one's creativity comes from, Tim?
So the question is, does that, it's the same place that creativity comes from. I think when it comes from a very like spontaneous, like it's just kind of pouring out, yes. Yes. Yeah, inspirations, creativity, wonder. Right, thank you, Deb. All right, so we have about 10 more minutes or so. What else? Anyone else like to share or ask or explore anything? You can see these questions really help to flesh out the practice. It helps us, you know, get inspired around it. Helps us, oh yeah, I can see that for myself. In person? Yeah, Carlito, come on down. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
You got to really hold that.
Like this. Oh.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, is that good?
Yeah, think of like Elvis, you like.
I'll tell you, thank you very much.
So I was thinking about this before, and then you said, when I'm busy, I'm well-defined. Like, I know who I am. And I've been experiencing, it feels like craziness because I will be walking in the park and I will all of a sudden be sad. And I'm like, wow, I'm really sad. And then literally 60 seconds later, it's gone and something else is in its place. And I'm just like, what the heck? You know, it's a little unnerving, but I'm just sitting there observing this. You know, and when you said that, it's like, yeah, that's why it's upsetting. It's because who am I? And it just changes so fluidly. And I guess my question is that normal? So that's my question.
So the question is that normal? Could you guys hear or not quite? Just to quickly paraphrase it, make sure I captured that accurately enough. The, you know, being started with the comment around that we really define when we're, you know, we know who we are, what we're doing. And noticing like walking in the park that there's almost seems crazy that one moment being really sad and then that falls away and something else arises. And then there's like, okay, well, who am I if these different things arise? So remember our whole year on dependent origination and how that sense of self takes form, gets born, and then passes away. And so what you're seeing is the rising of a sense of self momentarily, being sad. The expression of that is sadness and all thoughts around it. But if you're observing it, it only has a certain lifespan and it falls back into stillness. And then there's something, because we have this momentum of samsara, of our conditioning, something else arises. But you're starting to see these, you see it as arising as discrete things and falling away. And it actually happens, you know, many times in a moment, you know, certainly in an hour, there's different senses of us who are arising and passing away, often in response to something else, sound, thought, you know, thoughts really generate a lot of those. But if we observe it like you're talking about, just seeing it, it starts to play itself out, starts to burn out. It's like a firecracker, and then it fades, and there's the next one that comes up. And we think we are the firecrackers, like we're all the fireworks coming up, but we're really, we're the air, the space, the still night that's holding it. And then, yeah, who you are, you see it's not defined by any one mind state, any one mood when any sense of who I am. There's a relativeness to it. There's relativeness. There's a Carlito who's sad now. There's a Carlito who's trying to plan all this stuff. But there's also this absolute reality of the stillness.
Just hang in
there. Okay. Start to hang in there, start to relax into that. Because there's a relief when you don't have to identify with those states. It's like, I don't have to identify that I'm the sad person. I'm this nervous person. I'm this worried person, angry person, whatever it is. That what I am is actually something that's beyond all of those. And then there's a deep peace that starts to come. A deep peace that starts to come.
Okay. I heard P-I-E-C. Okay.
Thank you, Carlito. All right, back online. Anyone like to share anything? Kathy, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wonder, Tim, that really caught my ear, deep peace. I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that.
Deep peace. Yeah, so it takes a lot of energy to manage these, you can say the moods, the mind states, but really we're pointing toward that sense of self that's really behind all of this. Because we're identified with something, we're having these thoughts, it's all these beliefs that we have to defend, we have to justify, we have to make more of, less of. But that's a lot of energy with that. And once we start to see through that, just as something, it's like everything is conditioned, or it's impermanent, it arises and passes away, we start to be curious what it passes back into. And then we start to realize, okay, what is that? And it's happening all the time. It doesn't catch our attention because we're really trained to notice what's wrong, what's engaging, what's triggering. We don't notice those moments of peace, like this Deb was talking about, just going out and, okay, I'm just here. I'm just still. And so that's like this picture really points to that release of effort, that release of having to do anything. And really what I mean by that is the need to really tumble and engage and wrestle with that sense of self, to act from that. Does that make sense, Kathy?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, anyone back here in the room like to share anything? Let's have me surrounded after, do a big sweep. Well, I think someone else had their hand online. Who was it?
It was me, Rory.
Rory, go ahead.
You kind of answered my question. So, what you were saying, I think it was to Kathy. So I pictured when you were talking about that I'm sitting, have you seen these things where the head is sitting in the middle and all these thoughts are going around, all these different things, and that it's hard to, I think it's such a bad habit. I'm an anxious person. So I'm thinking when you said, that all these mind states, like whether you're sad or anxious, what did you say? Oh, let's see if I can find it. That you don't have to identify with the sad person or the anxious person, that we're actually beyond that. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. The essence of what we are is beyond that. There's the relative reality that, I'm a person who's having that, but that's when we see that as that's the end of the story. That's where we become lost. We become really struggle. Go ahead.
No. So you're saying, is there a way to explain what you mean by actually beyond all that? Because I have a sense of what you mean, but I can't quite make it intelligent, I want to make it mean something. Which is probably not the right way to go about it. But what does that actually mean that we're beyond all that? Because that sounds like a really nice place to be.
Yes. Yeah. So, and we have, this is kind of the paradox, but just, we have to start where we are. We have to start from our normal perspective and normal sense of who we are and how we view the world, including all our, really our identification with those different mind states. That's just how we start. But we can, through hearing the Dharma, through practice, we can learn to start to direct it in a way that starts to actually dissolve it, starts to allow us to see through it. Okay. So going back to, we talked about noting earlier on this evening. Noting is a great way to actually work with this. It's like you talked about being an anxious person and you know, how the thoughts get really strong. Start to say, okay, can I just note that? Say, okay, there's a thought of anxiety or worry. Now, by doing that, you've already stepped a little outside of it. You're not lost it in the same way. You have a little bit more perspective. You're witnessing it. So there's already a little bit of a sense of separation between you and that sense of identity around that. And so that starts to give you that little bit of perspective, a little sense of that. That's not, if I can observe it, I can't be fully in it. Something else is observing that. Right. And then if you follow that into quieter and quieter ways, and just you can just every time you see, okay, there I am observing, can I see if I can observe that observer? Right? Yeah. So it gets more and more subtle. But if you follow that, and it just takes the curiosity, it takes the sincerity, it takes a little bit of kind of dedicated time to do it. You know, you can do this each day, you can make a sense of inquiry around it. But you start to notice that sense of you isn't as defined as you thought it was. Or like Carlito noticing how, wow, I'm like, I was really this person a second ago, and now I'm at this person. And you start to realize, well, how can I be both? And you realize, well, maybe the answer is I'm actually neither. That something, I'm something different. A way I like to also point toward it is this quality of seeing and looking at it. It's like the air that's surrounding you right now. You know, the air doesn't have any judgment, any opinion about what shape you are, how old you are, what you look like. It just touches you. It really envelops you without any resistance. It just simply meets you how you are. Mm-hmm. That quality of awareness, if you bring that toward even something like worry that's charged, that's all it takes.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I know we're out of time, but I wanted to mention, I think it was Carlita who said, let's go eat or let's go do this. And I was thinking, who is the S in let's? Let us. You know, I started thinking, well, who's the other person?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's, of course, there's the practicalness of it that, yeah, I need to say, I'm going to go do this. So we know who's doing what.
No,
it's the identification of that. Yes. And that's a deep question. That's a deep question that we will keep exploring here as we go through these pictures.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rory. All right. Thank you all for your great questions and engagement and participation. So next week we'll have another talk exploring the same picture and take it a little different way. And then we'll go from there. So have a wonderful evening. And if you're new, you're welcome to come up and say hi. And we'll see you next time.